This is the DTV Digest, the podcast that brings you news and reviews of films which didn't make it to the cinema. And now, here's your host, Mike Parkin.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the DTV Digest, the podcast that brings you news and reviews of films which didn't make it to the cinema and instead went straight to DVD, Blu-ray, and streaming media, which I guess at the current crisis is all of them. But there you go. Joining me this week is Richard Hawes.
Hello, everybody.
And Tom Jolliffe, the blast from the past.
Hi there. Hi, everyone.
And I'm your host, Mike Parkin. And this week, we are bringing you the Omar Epps starring Trick, the latest film from the horror collective called The Perished, a short shot called The Dark Recess, which was written by somebody not too far away from this podcast. And we're going to round off with our DTV throwback, The Rage, starring Andrew Divoff. Right, so let's crack on. So our first review is Trick. Since the Halloween of 2015, a small county has been terrorized each year by a masked killer who goes on a killing spree at Halloween parties. Detective Mike Denver thought he'd killed the killer known as Trick on the first fateful night, but he seems to return each time, taking more lives each year. So this is quite a decent sized budget slasher movie. We don't get too many of these days. I thought this had a brilliant opening. The the initial attack at the party was really well done, really fast, very well edited. And then when it sort of cuts over to the hospital and introduces Detective Denvers and a bit more about Cheryl, sort of one of the leads, I thought it was absolutely superb. But the problem with this film for me is its relentlessness. There are so many people getting killed left, right, and centre. And it seems that half the cast here are simply slasher fodder. It's detrimental to the characters we're meant to be caring about. Over to you, Tom.
I would say pretty much the same, really. It starts off really well, and it kind of feels almost like that old school kind of horror where you jump straight into it. I'd suppose like Evil Dead 2, where it just kicks off right from the beginning. It just keeps on hammering away at that kind of pace. So I think first 40 minutes I really enjoyed, and then it started to get a little bit kind of repetitive for me. And I felt like one of the characters in particular, played by Christina Reyes, she starts in the film and then she sort of disappears for like a middle section and comes in towards the end, but you don't really feel much development for her. So yeah, she's like one of the central characters, but I felt like she missed something.
I think they struggled with the focus of who to focus on in the film.
Yeah.
The thing is, I love police procedurals, I really do. And I love slasher films as well. And this kind of sort of falls in the middle of both, So you get half procedural, half slasher, but, at the expense of each other to a certain degree. Rich, how about you? What's your initial thoughts on this?
I was looking forward to it because the director is the Canadian Patrick Lussier, who I first saw with the first films of his I saw were the ones he did for Dimension Films. So he started with the DTV sequel, The Prophecy 3, but then he got kind of his big break was Dracula 2000, which was eventually released over here in the UK as Dracula 2001. And then he went back to DTV to do the subsequent sequels, but he's worked his way back up and made quite a lot of high profile horror movies in particular, specifically the one most connected to this, I would say, would be My Bloody Valentine, the remake of that in 2009 or something, which was full of excess. And I would say this film has that same sort of quality, that sort of relentless, like as you were saying, that sort of relentless pace and the kind of excessive body count. But he also this is the first film, feature film, he's made in about 8 or 9 years. The last one being Drive Angry, which I actually forgot was a Patrick Lussier film, and I still haven't caught up with, even though it's got Nicolas Cage in it. So I've pretty much liked everything that I've seen, and this included. It is basically a reworking of all the themes of the original Halloween, with Omar Epps in basically the Loomis role, with the Christina Reyes, as you say, as the Laurie Strode of the story. The killer is, you know, unstoppable. He gets shot out of windows and then comes back every year. And there's twists in the tales and whatever. And yeah, the focus is a bit of an issue. The film has it's independently made. It's not a big studio release like Drive Angry and that was. So you can see the lower budget coming through, especially in the cinematography. It's not quite as polished. But enjoyment, I couldn't fault it at all. Some of the twists and that are a bit telegraphed. Especially in terms of casting, I would say. I enjoyed it a lot, and I would highly recommend it.
I'm not wholly familiar with the cast, so it's usually the thing, isn't it? When you're watching like a murder mystery show or something, or, you know, and it's like, ooh, who's the bad guy? And then there's a name that you recognise as a guest star, and you go, well, obviously it's going to be him or her, you know. So this one, I wasn't sort of. I didn't have that sort of element as who might end up being sort of tricked, as it were.
And I think a lot of the target audience won't. You know, a lot of the people who are seeing this won't be familiar with some of the older films that it's referencing. And that'll be to its benefit, because it will feel fresher and more intense, I think, to people who haven't seen a film like this for quite a long time. You know, things like My Bloody Valentine and that were like 10 years ago now, when the last sort of big slasher trend was. There hasn't really been a lot since.
No, I think Black Christmas was the last one. I haven't seen the remake yet. I'm interested to see it.
I've heard it's quite a different approach, that one.
Yeah, it's a very different approach, apparently. But this one, I mean, you know, it's nice to see Tom Atkins in there. Very recognizable.
Yeah, absolutely.
Actor, you know, from The Fog and sort of numerous other things over the years.
Well, most notably, the Halloween 3, Season of the Witch.
Yeah. And, I mean, one of the things, you know, watching the film, and it does, you know, there are certain set pieces and things where you're watching cops literally just sort of run around in circles, sort of chasing Trick, and you know he's never where they think he is and all the rest of it, and there's like an inconsistent approach to what Trick is and what he can do throughout the film. I mean, the bit where the two FBI agents, for example, I mean, that's straight out of a Saw movie, you know, whereas other bits are more frenzied or, you know, and all the rest of it. But I did like the ending ties a lot of that up quite nicely. I like, you know, as like Tom, I was, you know, enjoying the first sort of half of this, and then sort of the next sort of 30 minutes or so is a bit of a slog because it was just more of the same. But when we went back to the hospital at the end of the film, I thought it perked up quite considerably, and I liked the setup, even though it gave no motive for what was actually going on. You know, it sort of answered some questions, but then posed others, like why, you know, is it being the main one? But yeah, there was a nice reveal at the end, and I'm kind of hopeful that, you know, if and when there is a sequel to this, and I'm sure there will be probably, I hope they've got the guts to keep what they've set up and go forward with that, rather than just reset everything. You know, and just have another bunch of teens or something. I would be really impressed if they're able to, you know, sort of pick up where they left off and sort of gave us something more in depth.
I think you've sort of pointed out something quite key there, is that this is a post-Saw slasher film, which is interesting because we have, apart from Jigsaw like 2 years ago, we haven't, it's really only now that we're getting another Saw film. You know, there haven't been that many. But the sort of style of some of the kills is, as you say, with those agents and stuff, is very much that kind of, I don't know, I wouldn't say, yeah, quite, some of the kills are a bit strained the credibility of, you know, how would you set it up that quickly kind of thing.
Well, that's the thing, isn't it? That's kind of what I'm sort of driving at, is yeah. You know, some of it is like, yes, we planned this all in advance so that when you aborted the barge, this was going to happen, you know, all that sort of stuff.
But I did like the kills, though. I did those bigger kills, apart from the frenzied knife slashing stuff. I did like the sort of mixing it up with it.
There was, I mean, you know, as I mentioned, you know, there's a lot of characters getting sort of slashed left, right, and centre. Some of them, like, within seconds of appearing on screen. But there was one character I did like, which was the young deputy who gets killed at the barge. Because she gets the modern day equivalent of here's a picture of my wife and kids, or, you know, 2 days from retirement moment.
Yeah.
You know, because literally she's just turned around to the sheriff and said, oh, I've met a girl or something, and then splat. It's like, yeah, okay, you've had two scenes and you know, you've told us something personal about yourself and now you're dead. So, yeah, there you go. Bit spoiler alert. But there's so many, you know, there's loads of sort of scenes like that. I mean, Tom Atkins gets a few scenes, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, he gets a much bigger part than I expected, to be honest. Yeah. And, you know, I don't know how old he is now, but he must be getting on. Mm.
And, you know, I like the detail as well about Cheryl not remembering what she'd done at the party, you know, that first time. And the fact that other kid had sort of like bragged that he was the one who did it, you know.
Yeah, well, that was I didn't quite get that. I thought that was a bit convenient.
Well, quite like that. But I also like the fact that, you know, this guy, high school was like 4 years ago, and he's still wearing his Letterman jacket, you know, and, you know, still acting like the high school hero sort of thing, even though, you know, that was like 4 years ago. Get a job. It was just amusing as well.
Tom Atkins was in My Bloody Valentine as well prior to this, and I think that had that film itself had similar problems because that was. Did you see it?
I haven't seen that remake.
You haven't seen it. Okay, well,
Jensen
Eccles, yeah.
Jensen Eccles from Supernatural. Yeah.
So the problem, I mean, that film goes so big and over the top and the kills are so sort of Jason Voorhees type style.
Yeah.
But the explanation at the end, you know, sort of the way it pans out, it doesn't tie up. You know, it's too supernatural for not something that's supposed to be not supernatural, basically.
Right.
So that was my only real problem with that film. But I tell you, I generally enjoy these sort of slasher movies and that he does. Now, he wrote this with Todd Farmer, who does also appear in the film. He usually has small roles in the films that he writes. He's worked a lot with Lucia in the past, but he started out with Jason X, in which he also had a co-starring role. Another quite intentional. So I was just thinking, as a screenwriter, Tom, would you like to appear in one of your films, or have you done?
I do sometimes, but only if absolutely necessary. Or if I can't get anyone else to do it. So
would you prefer to be a corpse, yeah? Something like a quick victim rather than having to deliver too much of your own lines.
Yeah, no, I don't want to take too much attention, I guess.
So any more thoughts on this one, Tom?
Yeah, no, I just, I echo really what Mike said, that, you know, the start of it starts off so kind of, you know, unexpectedly action-y. So it just sort of kicks off right into it. It gets a little bit repetitive, I guess. But I mean, at the same time, there's quite a lot of imaginative deaths in it. And then sort of towards the end, it picks up again. So I do think, yeah, it does sort of lead on to potential sequel and something that would be quite interesting, I think. So I'd definitely be looking out for the sequel.
Mm-hmm. Slasher
movies, when it comes around.
Slasher movies have been, you know, the theme has been done to death, and everything in this film we've seen before in one film or another.
Yeah.
Do you think there's still a market for, you know, films like this to sort of keep retreading that ground?
I think so. You'll always get they always tend to do quite well. I can see this maybe having a little pickup effect on a few more sort of DTV slashes, maybe, yeah, depending on how well it does.
Yeah, at the moment, it's only a digital release. It's not been there's not been a DVD or Blu-ray in the offing.
Yeah, a little point at the moment, isn't there? You know, probably going to do better on digital than anything else for the time being.
But I mean, when the release was being planned,
oh yeah,
mm-hmm, ages ago, that wasn't on the table. It's not like they had a release plan and they cancelled it. They weren't planning to. So I think this is kind of one of those things where if it does well on digital, it will eventually have a physical release. It'll be interesting to see what a Blu-ray, you know, like an extras packed Blu-ray would look like for this, I think.
I think because of the director, it should get sort of some kind of physical release, mm-hmm, just from his name, really, and the cast.
Mm.
You'd think so, really, like a good Blu-ray release, maybe.
Yeah, on that note, I actually haven't seen Omar Epps in anything for quite a while, and I really enjoyed him in this.
Right, you finished?
Yep.
Not going to talk over me? Good. Right, okay. So my final point on this is that with any sort of horror franchise, they tend to sort of pick out the monster, the creature, the villain, you know, and focus on that rather than any other sort of part of the story, the original story. And that's kind of what I'm hoping here is that they've got the balls to actually sort of take what's from the original, not just reset everything, but with a trick and sort of kick off again, but to sort of pick up where they actually sort of leave off and carry on. Scores, gentlemen.
I'm going to go 7.
Tom?
Yeah, I'll go 7 as well.
Yeah, 7 from me as well. 3 7s for Trick. Our second review this week is The Perished. Sarah Decker is dealing with the trauma of an abortion. Shunned by her mother and dumped by her boyfriend, she recovers at an old parochial house recently bought by the parents of a friend, Davit. Unbeknownst to her, though, the house was the site of a mass baby grave, and they need a mother. Okay, so this is the latest film, which is sort of curated by the Horror Collective, who also put out Greenlight and The Dare. Both films I really liked. This is a very different film, and it's a perfect subject matter for three grown men to be talking about, which is abortion and women's rights about abortion and the state of abortion in Ireland, because that is basically the main driver of the film. I'm going to throw this straight over to Tom.
Yeah, it's a bit difficult, this one. It's It kind of plays out, you know, the style of it is almost like an indie drama.
Yeah.
Much of the film, quite dark. So you got the lead character. She finds out she's pregnant. At the same time, she's she gets dumped basically by her fella just before she's about to tell him that she's pregnant. Mm. Once her parents find out that she's basically, you know, pregnant out of wedlock, she gets kicked out. And then, you know, she has the abortion and she ends up at this place to sort of, you know, to rest and recuperate. Yeah. So, I mean, Yeah, there's some dramatic scenes, but I think it's quite difficult to know what quite they were going for, whether they were going for sort of more psychological drama. And then towards the end, there's a certain definite shift into sort of more horror.
Yeah, it's almost as if they thought, oh yeah, this is meant to be a horror film.
Yeah, but it's sort of, it's like almost like they realised that in the last 10 minutes.
Exactly.
It's difficult to know how much of a point they wanted to make, really, in terms of what they were...
So, Rich, yeah. Do you think this film is pro or anti-abortion?
Well, I don't think it's taking... I don't think it's taking a stance either way. I think it's trying to make a point about the way the women are treated, regardless of what decision they made. It opens with those really harrowing statistics, and I think ends with some as well. But the film itself, I don't think it explores the topic to the extent that is kind of warranted by the opening and closing information. I think they could have, explored it quite a lot more. The mentioning that her best friend's house, her best friend's parents' house, who she goes where she goes to stay. It was one of these mother and baby homes. This is all taking place in Ireland, by the way. I don't know if we mentioned that, where it's all Roman Catholic kind of stuff going on, and the way the mothers were treated, and the babies and that were killed, treated themselves as well. So that's kind of, oh, by the way, I'm a bit uneasy about that place because there was that stuff that happened there, and it was like, "Oh, well, that's my parents' house."
Said the guy at the garage, Mr. Exposition, basically, which is the only way we actually find out this information.
I know, because it makes no sense because that's clearly like his local shop or whatever, and he's probably been in there a million times, and they just sort of comes up. But anyway, it's definitely what you're saying. It's kitchen sink drama. With psychological horror, sort of throwing back to, I've seen Don't Look Now reference, but stuff like Rosemary's Baby as well. It's the guilt of, what she's done, because she had to go away and have the abortion, and she's carrying that around with her, no pun intended. The most of the film then takes place in the house, which is a fairly unremarkable location. It's quite, quite a regular looking house, so you don't get any sort of grand sense of anything from that. It's kind of just implied, and then unfortunately it does end with a bit of a cheap looking monster kind of thing going on, and a ponderous conclusion. I don't know if you turned off exactly when the credits started or whether you stuck around for a bit, but there is a bit more to the story after the first few credits. It's only a short scene, but it's like a mid-credits scene that sort of builds on that a bit more. But I liked it. I mean, I did like the performance of the actress. I thought the kitchen sink stuff was done really well. It didn't, but it doesn't match the poster, which has this. I mean, the poster's amazing. No. It's got this real 1980s. Neon aesthetic going on, which I love, but the film itself just does not match that at all.
Yeah, I'm with you guys on this. I like the drama side. In fact, you could almost argue that the film didn't need any supernatural elements to it. It could have played with the ambiguity of her guilt and that's sort of manifesting itself and the complications following the abortion and things. That could possibly have been a stronger story for it. I didn't mind the monster creature. I just wish there'd been a bit more clear. I got the impression that it was supposed to be made up of all the fetuses or something.
That could explain the size.
The sort of lumpy bits and things, but I don't think you get a clear enough look at it. Unfortunately, I kind of like the way her boyfriend dumped her. That was really, really shitty. Basically, it was like, I'm doing this for you. I'm dumping you for you because I love you, which is just hilarious.
And then he changes his mind couple of days later. No, doesn't it?
I'm not getting any. the scene with the mother, I thought was really strong as well. You know, I can imagine that probably being played out in many a home following, you know, that sort of discovery as well. You know, that sort of hard-bitten, overbearing, sort, you know, sort of religious mother. Yeah, I can definitely sort of see that happening. Yeah, I thought it was pretty strong all the way through. It's just that at the end, I just sort of got a bit weird and a bit sort of, it lost focus as to what was actually going on. And yeah, by the end of it, I'm like, so what's actually happened? You know?
Yeah, I know what you're saying, because it did get really muddled with that other character coming in and stuff going on with her.
Yeah, so that was kind of interesting as well, because you know, her attitude when she, you know, when she finds out that Sarah had an abortion, and her attitude to it, and the sort of the reveal as to why she feels that way, I thought that was really good. But yeah, I just think it sort of lost its way in the final moments, so you didn't really sort of know what to make of it, unfortunately.
Tom, any more thoughts?
No, I agree. Yeah, I think it's one of those things. I guess it's probably quite difficult if they'd have just made straight up drama, you know, sourcing the money to get a film made as opposed to doing horror. So it's almost as if the horror side of it is kind of forced upon them.
Yeah,
or not quite sure how to do it. Yeah,
it's supposed to be easier and sort of more profitable, isn't it? Sort of horror than a drama, I guess, and probably is more attractive to investors and things like that. But yeah,
what I think is interesting is that we started this review by saying, you know, well, this is going to be an interesting one for three guys to talk about. But this film itself was written and directed by a man. So I can't help but be interested, one, in to think how will this connect with a female audience. And also, how would it have been if it was made by a woman? I think it would have been a potential. I mean, if for example, if the idea had been worked with by Paddy Murphy with a female writer director something to bring it to screen, what sort of other dimensions they could have brought to it? I think that I'm sure there's probably other films that have explored this kind of thing, but that's
yeah.
Do you see what I'm saying? That's the sort of resume. Yeah, I think that's what I'm saying. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So how would you guys score it?
I'd give this one a 6.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'd be the same. Yeah, 6 as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think 6 is fair.
Cool. All right. So this is from the Horror Collective. You should be able to find it on a streaming service, iTunes and whatnot. So that is The Perished gets 3 sixes from the DTV Digest. Our short shot this week is The Dark Recess. Fighting insomnia, creative emptiness, and haunted by her past, Charlie longs for a cure to her ailments. Maybe Jacob X, a radio psychologist Charlie picks up by chance on an old analog signal, may hold those answers. Now, this is directed by Oliver Jolliffe, who I'm assuming, Tom, is your brother.
Yeah, that would be right.
Mm-hmm. And it was written by you.
Yeah.
Yourself, even. So we can blame you for using the phrase old analog signal when discussing radio signals, radio channels on the...
I suppose analog signal would have done, yeah.
I don't know. It just sounded weird coming from this particular actress as well. It sounded like it belonged on Star Wars or something. Okay, so yes, The Dark Recess follows this young woman suffering from insomnia, so going on long walks at night and other things, finds an old radio in her garage and automatically tunes into a frequency at 66.6 and picks up a radio psychologist called Charlie, who seems to be talking directly to her. Rich, over to you.
We previously looked at the film Winter Hill, which Tom wrote. And did your brother direct that one as well, Tom?
No, that was someone else.
That was someone else. Yeah. So, but the film was really strong, and I really enjoyed that one a lot. And I enjoyed this one a lot too, as well. There are three things in particular the three things that I really loved about this, and one of them is something you're also responsible for, and I'm gonna say the cinematography was excellent. Mm-hmm. The performance of the lead actress, Katie McKenna, I think it was,
yeah,
I thought was great. Yeah. Her delivery, you know, her fragile and anxious performance. As a very unsettled central character, I thought was great. But the other thing I really, really liked a lot from the outset was the music, which I didn't realise that you'd worked on with, Rachel?
Rachel Shuttleworth.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You guys did an amazing job with that. It's got real sort of industrial kind of quality and little touches of like the Nightmare on Elm Street music, I felt.
Yeah,
as well.
We were sort of very sort of inspired by a lot of 80s films.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that I wanted to do something quite sort of synth heavy, really. The time scale of it that I wanted to do, we'd had another composer who was going to be doing it before who dropped out. So then I took over and we were trying to get it complete by a certain time. So then I got Rachel to come on board and help as well.
Yeah.
So we basically split it in half. I did half the tracks, and then she did half the tracks sort of independently,
mm-hmm.
working from a guide. And it just, yeah, we were lucky, really. It matched quite well together.
It worked brilliantly. And I didn't realise that you were, you were a multi-talented individual, obviously. I didn't realise that you were. Have you done quite a lot of music?
It's been more a sort of hobby more than anything, really. I come from quite a musical family anyway, so
was it your uncle who's in Tangerine Dream?
Yep, he was in Tangerine Dream. I had another uncle who was in a sort of 80s rock band. I had a cousin who was in an English rock band, so I just decided, no, I'm going to do movies instead.
Is this like, you know, like an Indian family of doctors, and one decides to sort of go run away to the circus?
Yeah, but we're just a family that doesn't like to make money, so it's just like being a musician, actor, screenwriter. Yeah.
I have to say your brother did a pretty bang up job, not only behind the camera but in front of it as well. He's sort of Machiavellian sort of devil kind of character, thought worked really well within the film.
Yeah, he's a bit of an all-rounder as well. So I think the way we like to work is that we like the freedom to be able to, if we wanted to do a film like tomorrow, well, we couldn't do it now because of the coronavirus, but, you know, I could do certain things, he could do certain things, like he can shoot it, edit it, do all the grading, sound design. So, and he's all self-taught as well. So he's basically picked this up himself.
So did you guys grow up making movies together, you know, on the camcorders?
Oh, yeah, we'd always be sort of running around the woods. There'd be certain agreements. So I was always a slightly unwilling participant to be in front of camera, so I'd normally sort of have to be paid off somehow, which might have been like I'd get to throw him down a hill or something just for my own amusement. So.
And how close are you in age?
He's 3 years younger.
Uh-huh, okay.
Yeah.
Cool. Were you particularly happy with the result of the film, the way it came out?
We were really happy. We worked quite... Yeah, we've got a few awards, and we did quite well on the festival run.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's just one of those things that we wanted to make certain films the way we want to make them, and they're not necessarily always going to be the kind of films where someone's going to be interested in sort of financing them or making or putting any sort of money into it. So, because, you know, in terms of horror, people prefer stuff that's a bit more generic, sort of straight up, I don't know, slasher films and things like that. So we just decide, you know, whatever we can, we'll make a film and we'll get a few people in to help us out. You know, and like with Katie McKenna, we really lucked out because she's It's basically her first sort of proper film. And, you know, sometimes you've got to give a chance to sort of someone a little bit younger or someone just starting out. And then if you're lucky, it pays off, and it did.
And I see from this, she's also going to be in one of your features, the Tooth Fairy sequel.
Yeah, yeah, that's... I mean, I suppose because, you know, she helped us out on this film. So the same with Rachel Shuttleworth. She's scoring another film that I've done with Proportion.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you'd like to help people out once they've helped you out.
Yeah, and I think it's quite nice, sort of community kind of develops, doesn't it?
Yeah, that's it, really. And I was quite happy to recommend her anyway, because she did such a good job for me.
Yeah, she's great. I mean, she delivers all your dialogue really well. I mean, again, it's one of those, we're talking about the Parish a minute ago. You know, they're similar kinds of movies in that way, is that they both have those sort of fragile, sort of broken characters at their heart. But I thought Katie McKenna's performance in this, of your script, was much better than the performance. You know, not that the other performance wasn't good, but I thought this really shined for me, having watched the two back to back.
Yeah. I like to think that the Dark Recess will be her sort of, do you remember you did this film back in the day? Kind of like in 10 years' time.
Yeah, not one that she's trying to cease and desist people from adding to her filmography and things. It's like, no.
Yeah.
So this film has just recently been released on Amazon Prime.
Yeah.
But yeah. I believe it was made, was it 2 years ago?
Yeah, we shot it...
Doing the festival circuit?
Yeah, we shot it September 2018. And then most of 2019, it was on sort of doing like a festival run. Mm. Now we've got it out on Amazon now.
Yeah,
On Amazon UK at the moment, but we'll probably be looking to get it on at least the US as well.
Can I just ask, where was the woodland that you shot in? Because that was really picturesque.
That is the Marlow Common in Marlow.
Uh-huh. And so, where's Marlow? I have no idea.
It's in Buckinghamshire. It's along the Thames.
Okay.
So,
right,
nice little Thames town. So we grew up there, so we've shot in those woods like countless times.
Right. They added real production value, I thought.
Yeah, I mean, we lucked out as well. Nice, even though it's a sort of Indian summer day, really, late September, and got some nice lighting.
Now, we don't score our shorts or our... DTV throwback, but we will recommend that everyone checks us out. It's on Amazon Prime, The Dark Recess. Check it out. Our DTV throwback this week is The Rage, directed by Robert Kurtzman. Deep in the woods, a crazed scientist experiments with the Rage virus on campers he has abducted. After a fatal accident in his makeshift lab, one of his mutated creations escapes, causing havoc. Now, as usual, Rich tends to drag out films for the DTV throwback, but even though I consider myself a seasoned DTV watcher, I've never come across before. When was this one made, Rich?
This one was 2007.
Okay, so a relatively recent one for the throwback, only 12 years old. I hated this. I fucking hated this with a vengeance. I don't know. There's something about this film just really rubbed me up the wrong way. It really
tell
did.
Us how, tell us how you really feel, Mike.
I'm doing my best to find my words. So
this is a. This is a film that very much is playing to a particular audience, isn't it?
Yeah, a 15-year-old audience, so, basically. I mean, it is. I mean, when you got gags at the end of the film of a zombie having a pipe shoved up his ass into his stomach, and then he falls over with a splat, and then shit comes flying out of the tube. You know, there's only one particular audience that you're sort of aiming at. You know, the ones that are too young to be buying beer on their own. But anyway. Before we get into that, so we have this opening scene, which isn't bad, and Andrew Dearborn playing the evil scientist is actually pretty good value. there's a couple that he's sort of got strapped to these two tables that he's injecting with this serum that he's developed. It's already killed this woman. She couldn't take it. And there's an interesting scene where the guy on the other trolley suddenly goes, "What about my daughter? What have you done with my daughter?" And Divov just sort of turns over to this. He just looks over at this cage where these two zombies feasting on bits of body. And you think, yeah, okay, I know what's happened to the daughter now. So there was that sort of side to it. Then, you know, it all kicks off and the monster escapes. Then we get this this rather funny scene of a sort of heavy metal rave going on.
Yeah, Mushroom Head.
Is that the name of the band?
I think it's Mushroom Head.
Who are basically a poor man's Slipknot.
Now, it's all very much of that. We're all very much of that time, weren't we?
It is of that time, yeah. And the music actually wasn't too bad, but it was really weird seeing these people acting as if they're at a rave. But it's actually a sort of slash metal bloody concert, which is quite funny. But the funny part of this film is when this mutant zombie thing gets attacked by vultures and they become rage vultures and end up being sort of the main protagonist for a good part of the film. And you have these stupid fucking zombie vulture puppets attacking people mixed with CGI, which, you know, is on a par with Birdemic, really. It was that bad. So, and then the camera work just goes absolutely spastic. It really does. You know, it's as if the cameraman was slipping and sliding in the corn syrup in the van. He just couldn't keep the camera still. He's just shaking and shaking and shaking it to try and sort of like, oh no, this is really tense and horrible and exciting and yeah, shake, 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 shake. And it just drove me around the twist and gave me a headache.
So the director of the film is Robert Kurtzman. He's a special effects maestro, and the film itself is a showcase to an extent of pretty much every practical effect that they could try and do. Do you think it was successful from that standpoint? Do you like his work?
Well, the thing is, Kurtzman works for KMB, doesn't he?
Yeah.
He's the K out of KMB, who have worked on films like From Dusk Till Dawn and loads of other films over the years. Big budget films, who are able to give him a decent sized budget to actually do his special effects. Here he is doing a independent film that he's directing himself. And I suppose, yes, you know, he is doing the best he can on a limited budget. You know, there's loads of prosthetics and gore effects and things. It doesn't look particularly polished at times, but there's so much going on. And I think the shaky camera work is doing a lot to sort of try and mask a few of that. Like when there's one of the girls ends up falling in a pond and gets attacked by the vultures. And yeah, it's just all over the place. But yeah, I think it's a reasonable showcase for his work, you know. But he's done better stuff on bigger budget films.
Yeah, and that for me was the disappointment, because I'm a big fan of Wishmaster. Mm-hmm. And this was the first film he directed since then. So this was 10 years after Wishmaster, which had fantastic visual effects, great style, great script and whatever. Really very entertaining film. And this one was just like micro-budget, borderline trauma, a straightforward splatter movie, which was just about as being as over the top and grotesque and as possible, and really almost having have basically looked like it was shot on video to my eyes, with the sort of bad effects and stuff. So yeah, I kind of struggled with it, really. I mean, I was watching it really late and struggling to stay awake, so I did kind of force myself to get through it. I wasn't against it, but I wasn't following the plot that closely, but there wasn't a huge amount of plot to follow. I did go and sort of at the end of the film went and filled in the blanks, but there wasn't much to sort of fill in. Andrew Divoff is at the beginning, and then he's gone, but luckily we sort of get him back again, which is quite good. And then we kind of get a lengthy villain monologue kind of flashback thing, which was probably not really necessary. As a film, as a story, I don't think it was very good at all. I mean, we've seen this kind of young people in a Winnebago, cabin fever, all that kind of stuff. We've seen these kind of themes explored quite often, cabin in the woods and whatever sort of touching
on stuff. Hills of Ice, RV, toy box, yeah.
Yeah, toy box, yeah, I haven't seen that one. That was the Denise Richards one, wasn't it? To be honest, there's not a lot to recommend this, I don't think. I think if you're curious, if you're interested in Kurtzman's work, you have to see it. And if you like Andrew Divoff, you won't be disappointed, I don't think, by seeing him in another, very nasty role. The vultures were an interesting dimension, but they didn't have the budget to sort of do much with it. So I haven't seen Birdemic, but I know exactly what you're saying there. Ultimately, I did find it quite a disappointment.
So you hadn't seen this one before?
No. I'd always wanted to, but never got around to it.
And now we have. You tick it off our bucket list.
Yeah.
Considering that you suggested Odd Thomas as well, which is a fantastic film, and I thought, we could have done that.
It was funny because I had this feeling. I was like, I'm sure you've said that Odd Thomas is really good, and I bet you'd jump at the chance to cover it. And you didn't. I'd rather watch The Rage.
Well, it was a case of, I thought, I haven't seen The Rage. It wasn't that I'd rather watch The Rage. If anything, I'd rather watch something I hadn't seen before. Come at it fresh. But there you go.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's fine.
But yeah, we'll schedule Odd Thomas for another day, which is good to see it's on Prime at least. But yes, so that's not exactly a recommendation from us this time for the DTV throwback. It's a bit of an anomaly in that case. It's the first DTV throwback that we haven't really been fully raving about. So there you go. We'd much prefer to sit through. What were the two Sean Astin ones? Sean Astin? No. Oh. The other guy. Demolition High.
Oh, yeah, Corey Haim, Corey Feldman.
Corey Haim, yeah, the other one. Yeah,
Corey Haim.
We'd much prefer sit through some Demolition High than we would through The Rage, that's for sure. Okay, so that's the end of this week's show. Thank you from my guests, Rich and Tom, for joining me.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Tom, have you got anything you'd like to plug? Any links you'd like to share when we do the footnotes to the episode?
Yeah, I do. So May 11th in the UK, I've got the Return of the Tooth Fairy coming out. That'll be on DVD on May 11th, and I think on streaming as well, possibly. Cool. So run out and buy that if you can.
Now, Tom, do we need to have seen the first film?
Not necessarily. I mean, they'll have a little cover of it, so they'll mention it, but I don't think it's entirely necessary.
So you were given free rein.
Yeah, brief recap, but
yeah, okay,
yeah.
Previously on the Tooth Fairy. Anyway, okay. So yes, we'll put a bit of a link on there, maybe a sort of picture of the DVD cover or something on the in the footnotes. So there you go. The Dark Recess is available on Amazon Prime, as we said, as is The Rage, if you dare check it out. Otherwise, our main feature, the Trick and The Perished, yes. So Trick and The Perished are available on streaming media. So check those out as well. Otherwise, thank you for listening and tune in again next time.
Thank you for listening to the DTV Digest. Let us know your thoughts in the comments and tune in again next time.